What up, everybody? Welcome to another edition of this Hard Knock Radio. Davey D hanging out with you this afternoon. On today's show, as promised, we want to play some excerpts from the historic gathering, the homecoming for Amiri Baraka. It took place over the weekend. Thousands of people showed up to the Newark Symphony Hall. I mean, we're talking everybody from Sonia Sanchez to Cornel West, Michael Eric Dyson, Jessica Care Moore, Saul Williams, you name it. They were in the place, and many spoke truth to power with regards to Amiri. They also talked in terms of looking forward and how it was important to use this occasion to really continue the work that Amiri had started, being progressive, being bold, being innovative. And so we wanted to share with folks some excerpts from that gathering. It was about 4 or 5 hours long, but you'll hear excerpts from Danny Glover, who hosted. You'll hear from Sister Soldier and Amiri Baraka's son, Ross Baraka. So without further ado, let's take it away with Danny Glover.
Good morning. Good morning. To our sister, Amina, and the rest of the family, I bring my greatest feeling of sadness. But what Amiri has left with us with is so much beyond what we can talk about today and speak about today. I remember as a young student at San Francisco State in 1967. In the spring of 1967, we had the opportunity to bring Amiri and Amina out there where we started a community communication project which galvanized the Bay Area community. Artists, intellectuals were part of that. And certainly it transformed the Black Student Union, which I was a member of at the time. And ultimately, that experience and what we learned that spring, what Amiri left with us, culminated in the strike of 1968, where we were able to form or bring about the first School of Ethnic Studies program in the country. Without Amiri at that crucial moment in all our developments, that might not have been the case. And so, as I thought about the years, and I often refer to the fact that he came into the BSU office that spring and said, "I want some of you so-called revolutionary brothers to come and be in these plays." I took on the task of being in a play. I'd never been in a play in my life. And I often tell people that he's one of the reasons, major reason, that I'm an actor. We talked about I remember the plays we did, Mad Heart, Jimmy Garrett's We on the Night, Ed Bullen's How Do You Do, Ben Caldwell's Job, First Militant Preacher. Those were the stories. But really, it formed the framework of how I've tried to approach the idea of my work as a citizen artist, as a cultural production, and how valuable it is informing people, exchanging ideas, allowing people to see themselves as we perform. Without that foundation, without that beginning, I can't imagine that I would have been an actor or simply been able to try to do some of the things I've tried to do. And I am forever grateful. I was like 20 years old, but I've got to know him much much more in those years after that. It's remarkable. I just came here from Sundance where we had a documentary that was based on Frantz Fanon's work, The Wretched of the Earth, called Concerning Violence. And the moment that I think about Amiri, Frantz Fanon, the work as an artist at that particular point in time, and to be able to offer this project, offer this work, this documentary, to our own library of conscious building is such one of the great, great symbols of my work as an artist. But let me move on with the rest of this, the program. I know my sister has a bad knee, but I'm gonna ask her to come up here again to join us here on stage, Sister Sonia Sanchez. Sister Sonia? Sister, I'm sorry. We begin. Sister Soldier, please join us.
Peace. Sister Amina, Baraka, I love you. Brother Raz, Baraka, I love you. To the Baraka family, Obalaji, Ahi, Amidi, I love y'all. And I've written some poems in my day, but I'm not a poet. I speak clear, straight words like the Quran requires us to do. It's not always something that you want to hear, but too bad. I met Brother Raz Baraka when he was 19 years old, and he invited me to his house because we were all part of student movement at that time. I thought Brother Raz Baraka was rich because I come from the projects and my family was on welfare. Food stamps, free cheese, Medicaid, Section 8 long lines, free peanut butter. I thought Raz was rich, number one, because he had a father. I thought it was awesome and unique that he had a father. I thought Raz's father was rich because they had a house. And I thought that Raz's father was rich because he had a beautiful wife who was not just pretty, but was also smart, was also strong. I thought Mr. Baraka was rich because he had all them sons. And every son that he had was different. Obalaji was a street cat, and I loved that fire in him. Loved it. Raz Jua, a thinker, a dreamer, a worker, a man who still has the ability to love and feel, and that makes him unique. I'm here to tell you in Newark, and maybe I don't have to, y'all are lucky to have Raz Baraka. Y'all are lucky to have him. You're lucky he still loves you. You're lucky he still fights. You're lucky that he's educated, but he's not a snob. You're lucky that he can handle his business, but he's still for the people. You're lucky that he still loves life and he still loves Newark, New Jersey. I thought Mr. Baraka was rich because his house was open to the people. And people loved him, and people protected his house, and people protected his family. I thought Mr. Baraka was rich because in their house, they had real conversations. I couldn't believe it. You could go there and you could talk about anything, the simplest issue to the most intellectual issue. And the great thing about him was because each personality was different, there was always a debate. I felt rich when I was in the Baraka house because I felt loved and I felt protected and I felt engaged intellectually, mentally. And although I didn't believe all the same things they believed and they didn't believe all the same things that I believed, we all had a respect for struggle, for truth, for the fight, for the people. Raz Baraka been following me around since I was a teenager. I said, Raz, we gonna go get these homeless people or we gonna make a summer camp? Raz just looked at me and said, all right. When we built the camp, we gonna write a curriculum. Raz was right there beside me, all right. He was there for the academics, for the intelligence. He was there for the fight, for the walk, for the building, for the work. I said, Raz, with this camp, we're gonna take all these urban youth from New York, from New Jersey, from Connecticut, and we're gonna create a vision of what we want the world to be instead of how they have the world today, which is depressing and debilitating to them. So what we need to do as young people at that time is gather up all of the people who can pass their wisdom to the children and present a new village, a new way of life. And Raz was there. When I said I can take 100 children from Newark, New Jersey, Raz went and got them. Talked to their mothers, talked to their fathers, bought them. Soldier, here they go. And we all went to camp and lived together and worked together and so on and so forth. So why am I speaking so much about Raz Jua Baraka at the celebration of the return of brother Mr. Amiri Baraka? Because what makes a man rich is not his money. What makes a man rich is not his clothing and his cars. What makes a man rich is his soul, his ability to marry a woman, to love a woman, to respect a woman, to hear a woman, to protect a woman, to create life in the womb, and then protect that life, and then raise that life. So I say on behalf of my own beliefs to brother Amiri Baraka, you always were a rich man to me. Thank you for the gifts that you gave to the world. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Alhamdulillah for Raz Jua Baraka. Thank you. I want to bring on Brother Raz with the words that I said to him when I first heard of the passing of Brother Amiri Baraka, his father. As surely as the maker of all souls gives us life, we will each taste death. But your father lived his life to the fullest. And never forget that your father was a man of action. And if he laid down now, It's because he's a political strategist. He laid down now. He made a path for you to walk on. He gave you everything you needed. And now the rest is up to you. Newark, if you got any sense at all, you better love him. You better elect him. You better protect him. You better support him. My friend, Raz Jewel Baraka.
I just want my family to stand up, please. On behalf of us all, we want to thank you for your love, your care, for taking care of my mother. Your kind words, your presence, because you didn't have to be here today, and we thank you for coming to show the world what my father meant to all of us. And the only thing that I can remember is my daughters and my nieces, they're crying. Ever find yourself somewhere lost, surrounded by enemies who won't let you speak your own language, who destroy your statues and instruments, who ban your boom ba boom, then you in trouble. Ban your boom ba boom, you in deep, deep trouble. Huh. Probably take you several hundred years to get out. Ba da 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 da. We are the blues ourselves, our favorite color, the actual guineas. The original Jew, the first Caucasian, we are the blues, the past, the gone, the energy, the cold, the saw teeth hotness, the smell above, draining the wind through the trees, the blue leaves us black, the earth, the sun, the fire pushing becomes our hearts. Be-doo-dee-doo-dee-doo-dee-doo. They ugly on purpose. They murder to explain themselves. They believe everything is dead and everything alive is their enemy. Heathens think fascism is civilization. Be-doo-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee. Arthur Blythe says it in a tradition. Tradition of Douglas, of David Walker, of Garnett, of Turner, of Tubman, of Ragers. Yeah, Ragers of kings and counts and dukes and satchel mouths and sunrise, of Bessies and Billies and Sassies and mass musical screamers again, of Brown's Well and Brown Sterling and Brown Clifford and H-Rap and H-Box, of black Baltimore sister blues anti-slavery singers, countless funky blind folks and one-leg country beboppers, tradition of Du Bois, Baby Dodds and Lovey Austin and Sojourner. I thought I heard Buddy Bolden say, you're so terrible, you're awful, why do you want to be the president of all of this anyway? Be-doo-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee. Fresh zombies. Okay, shuffle. Stink in neon, lie in lights. What is that noise, that thumping, that horrible sound? It's not drums, it's shuffling. Not old times, but new times. Double times, Tom McCoo.
Da 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 da. If Elvis Presley is king, then who is James Brown? God. Ba da 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 da. Ooh 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 ooh. A wow, it must be the devil. A wow, it must be the devil. A wow, it must be the devil. A wow, everything gonna be all right after you die. After you die, you gonna live like rich folks. After you die, ooh 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 ooh. Ba da ba da ba da ba da. Who own the air? Who own the water? Who own the crib? Who rob and steal? Who cheat and murder and make lies the truth? Who call you uncouth? Who live in the biggest house? Who do the biggest crime? Who go on vacation anytime? Who killed the most Zigans? Who killed the most Jews? Who killed the most Italians? Who killed the most Irish? Who killed the most Africans? Who killed the most Japanese? Who killed the most Latinos? Who? Be do walk through life beautiful more than anything. Stand up and walk through life. Love all things that make you strong. Be lovers. Be anything for all the people of the earth. You have brothers. You love each other. Change up. Change up and look at the world now and it's ours. Take it slow. We've a long time, a long way to go. Don't be sorry. Walk on and out in the sunlight life and know we are on the go for love. We whalers. We whalers. We are whalers. We get on a big whale and whale. Hey, whalers. Hey, whalers. Hey, whalers. Whale on. If we don't know anything already, we should understand that history is changing right before us. And those that rewrite it are doing it in front of our very eyes. That's what makes my father's life that much more important. He stood in the way of that, the attempt to revise history. He told our story the way it should be and needed to be told, with a mix of humor, fire, history, and a whole hell of a lot of music. But more importantly, it was the truth. He admired Du Bois a great deal and would talk about his idea of double consciousness or two-ness, that is, being African and American simultaneously, that duality of seeing yourself through the eyes of someone that despises you. He challenged that notion and attempted to attack our living psyche, to analyze that condition for us through his writing and his activity, and then to present to us a new self. He understood that we were African, that we arrived here on slave ships, and our existence was deeply rooted in Africa, but we were also undeniably American. Our food, our song, our talk, our motion in history was particularly American. His entire life tried to draw that picture for us, make us see the future of this country as inextricably tied to the fate of the condition of African American people. He tried to cure America of this sickness of national oppression of and later colonialism and imperialism and greed. If you still ain't clear, you should check out Why We Is American. Analyze it, read it, understand it, and you don't need this or anyone else to explain he or what his life was about. His fight for America included the black nation, white workers, Chicanos, Native Americans. Check it out yourself without the filter of your enemies. And on this day as the press try and rewrite what is and what he was, we are all here today to see for ourselves as witnesses to tell our story once again. Look, just look at the complexity and the diversity of this gathering, of those that loved him, that called him brother, father, comrade, in every language you can imagine, in every dialect, and in every color on this planet is represented in this hall here today. We are here ready to tell the truth. Look at these young people, these writers, these painters, these artists of all sorts, and teachers and professionals. They are not just here to bid farewell, to say goodbye, or to mock and gaze. They are here because Imamu Amiri Baraka lived, because he affected us all. And we, because of his life, we will live. And after this day, January the 18th, 2014, the world will never be the same. We are here witnessing again my father make another transition, a transition that once again will change all of our lives. It is no coincidence that things got real cold around here when he was moving away from us. The polar vortex, or whatever they call it, swept this country. It's proof to me that he was here, that all things are related, connected, and depend on each other. We all froze for a minute, stopped in our tracks. If you listen closely, you can hear or see Sun Ra riding on his orchestra to play homage and Coltrane and Ellington played in the background. His heart beat one last time and things warmed up just a little. And like the Bloods would say in the day, that was cold-blooded. But seriously, it makes us understand that our condition is imminent. That we have lived too long off of the fumes of history. We have lingered in the past and romanticized even the worst of what was good. It says to us that it's time to start history again. To let our tears germinate the seeds of a new day, it's time to push back. It's time to push back in a time where the most progressive elements of our society came together to elect an African-American president two times. That we can't stop there, that was just a precursor of what must come. It also marks that they will and have become more intensely backward, and that the most vile and dangerous and right-wing elements of this country show their heads. They rewrite our stories, they rewrite our history. They use Frederick Douglass's words to close public schools. They use Martin Luther King's words to deny us employment and opportunity, to make you oppose the very strategies that got us here in the first place. They use our children against us. They feed them violence and self-hatred and watch them murder each other on the street, then blame us for their deaths. They take a few of us. They take a few of us and teach them privilege and give them degrees in exchange for their humanity and send them back to further dismantle all that is left in our community. And the opportunists. And the opportunists and mercenaries that have turned our struggle into profit-making ventures that have made good synonymous with money or luxury, because as my father would say, luxury was a way for them to be ignorant comfortably, to have more things and despise others for not being able to get the things. They are the anti-art. In fact, recently I was accused of being a poet, which makes me my father's son. My mother, a dancer, a singer, a writer, so I guess that really condemns me to funklore, to art, to Baraka-ness. I'm proud of my father. They tried to destroy his life and haven't rested even in his death. Those that lie and call him friend while trying to destroy his children, his wife. But we are here to surround him, to protect him, to love him, to speak in one collective kuumba, to shout, nuestro hermano, nuestro padre, nuestro maestro, nuestro querido, the imamu, the living spirit, the pulsating in our struggle, the be of what is, the inevitable. He taught us to be artists in all of its forms, but focused us on content the most, to drive the point home, to be beautiful more than anything, that in and of itself was revolutionary in a backward time, that our ultimate job was to oppose what is ugly and spend his days trying to figure out what that ugly exactly was, so he could oppose it fundamentally and exactly. He taught us, as Cabral did, that culture was a weapon. One of his last works was entitled Razor. Guess he had a few people to cut before he got out of here. He was my father, our father, our strength, our voice. We knew we would be okay. We would get there soon when he was around. He was our confidence, our black on purpose. And when he spoke, you knew it would be said, what you were yearning, fighting, and thinking. He stood up all the time. And whatever be said about him, he was a man full of self-determination. He defined us. He defined for us the world and our place in it. He described our existence here, our trajectory, our being in this place. He was an artist and an organizer, a visionary and an intellectual, like Du Bois and Robeson and Douglas and Sterling Brown. He exposed this place with such mastery and rhythm alike. He was brilliant, and his movements through the world moved us all. His thoughts, his change, his discovery of himself pushed us. His sharpening of ideas corrected us all. And every mistake he made got us closer to the truth. All of us, some watching and many more, engaged with him. He carried the history of ourselves in his words. He fought for humanity and all that was needed to make him human. He was our griot, our living and breathing conscience. He introduced the world to itself and finally made us all relatives. Our mother Africa and the millions of hues of languages and song that rest on every footstep of this planet. The world is ours, he would contend. It belonged to the people, not kings or corporations or individuals, but to all of us everywhere. And the us was more ideological than it was physical. They say he was privileged, but sacrifice is privilege in a selfless society. But here, we are full of ourselves. Our moving forward predicated on how many others are left with nothing. Privilege is revisionism. I ran down a long Manhattan street, my siblings left in a car as my father and mother were beat by the New York Police Department. Or privilege like being busted over the head in Newark Rebellion by a schoolmate and chained to a wheelchair in the hospital, blood dripping down his face. Or privilege in refusing to grant him tenure when he authored more poems, essays, plays, musicals, fiction than most of the folks on the tenure committee combined. Or when they refused to publish his books and he had to go to Europe to get books published or put in print. Or when they took clothes off his kids' back and food from their mouths. Maybe he was privileged when they broke into our home and trashed everything and without stealing anything. Hell, the only privilege in this is that you are not alone. The same kind of privilege Malcolm had, or Garvey, or King, for that matter. The privilege to be counted among the best. They called him dangerous. Now that he was. Though he never killed anyone or blew anything up, didn't plot to do anything, but his ideas challenged power, his words revealed intent, and inspired people to wait, to move, to be counted. Now, Cat, C-Fun, that was dangerous. The Spirit House, the Street Theater, Soul Sessions, Unity with the Young Lords in the North Ward, that could be called dangerous. The Gary Convention in 1972, African Liberation Day, Black and Puerto Rican Convention, now that sounds dangerous to me. The election of King Gibson, blues people was dangerous. Black Fire was dangerous. The Black Arts Movement was dangerous. So was him being the Poet Laureate, which is why he was the last one. Now that was dangerous. He stood face to face. He stood face to face with the canon and introduced to literary academia real American stories of Langston Hughes, of Zora, of Melville, of Steinbeck, of Hemingway, of Twain, of Brown, of Morrison, of Sanchez, of Neal, of Angelou, and on and on and on. That there was an American experience that was deeply and particularly driven by our struggle here, and we are all over it. That you could not talk about anything that was truly and significantly American without discussing us. Its classical music is jazz. Its culture and identity will forever be marked with our fingerprint. As Malcolm would say, America's problem has always been us. Or Du Bois said in Souls of Black Folks, how does it feel to be a problem? And that problem has shaped this country and will forever shape it. Yeah, he was dangerous because as long as he was around, they was never safe. They called him a polemicist, a polarizer, as if race and class didn't exist before him. As if it didn't affect him try to swallow him whole as it did so many of us. Like the huge whale Melville told about, the menacing whale that my father rode and rode and rode and whale and whaled, that the only thing we have been number one in around the world is the gap between those that have everything and those that have nothing at all. That our history is littered with slavery, internment camps, murder, misogyny, and it was Baraka's voice, along with so many others, that gave us the courage to look at ourselves and actually see, then push us further and further and further toward democracy. They called him a racist. My father was no racist. You mean racists like Duke or Thurman, who made it to the higher echelons of American power, representing original terrorists that killed as language and negotiated with bombs? Yeah, he was angry with white America. And most conscious, honest white Americans were angry with her too. He was angry because Emmett Till was beat to death and dropped in the Tallahatchie River. He was angry because Mega Evers was murdered on his doorstep in the lap of his wife. He was angry because Goodman, Schwerner, and Cheney were killed trying to desegregate buses. He was angry because they orchestrated the death of Malcolm X, because Fred Hampton was killed while sleeping in his bed with his pregnant wife. He was angry because they deported Garvey and cursed Du Bois, because they brought a church wall down on the heads of four little black girls. because they taught us self-hatred and portrayed us as children or contemptible funny people, dangerously stupid or violently barbaric, because they shot us in our back and turned and hung us from trees for at least a century. He was angry, and he had a right to be angry. They say he was an anti-Semite. He was about as anti-Semitic as the Rosenbergs. He was a Semite. To be an anti-Semite would mean he would have to be anti himself. Semite or half, descendants of Northern Africa, Ethiopia, as in Sephardic, as in Phoenician, as in Armenian, as in Jewish. He was half. All of us are half. All of us are mixed, mestizo, as in Taino and Arawak, as in Blackfeet and Spanish and English and Angolan and Ghanaian, the mixed of African, European, and Native. All of us are. The world is at that stage. We are all mixed. We are all Jewish. We are all African. We are all Christian. We are all Muslim. All of us, everywhere, whether you like it or not. Africa runs through our veins. It is the blood in our DNA. It's not our color or our food or religion or our location or our texture of our hair that divides us. It's our ideas, what we believe, and ultimately the side we choose to be on. You cannot be in the middle. All of that is subterfuge. A cloak, a tall tale, a ghost story that keeps us divided while trillions are spent on speculation and advertisement, and most of the world's children grow up in poverty and suffer curable diseases. My father's biggest problem was that he could never just be a mouthpiece. His life had meaning. His words, his stares, his gestures, his grunts all had some real serious purpose. No matter how much money they offered him, how many book deals, movie parts, intellectual accolades and positions, he just couldn't be anything else. His eyes were too big, his walk too rhythmic. He wouldn't even wear a whole suit. He took the parts that were relevant and added the others as he went. He couldn't be what they wanted him to be. No matter how much of a genius they thought he was, it was undeniable what he could and did create, that the power he had in our lives. He would always be himself. And all the critics, the detractors, like talking machines, regurgitating what was carefully outlined for them, could never really understand him. From Stanley Crouch to the local, less imaginative imps that wanted his warmth but not his fire. They wanted him close enough to feel his energy, but far away enough to deny even to themselves that they ever really wanted to be free. They enjoyed the convenience of slavery. They were not traitors or compradors. They believed that stuff straight out. They thought the civil rights movement was unnecessary, that it would change on its own in time. At least they let us shop at their stores. All we needed was money. He called these people heathens. That is, they didn't have religion, or in this context, spirit. My father was a spiritual man. He couldn't escape it. He bore its name, Imamu, priest. He called Baldwin God's revolutionary mouth. He was God's muse, his song. You could hear it in his voice, his chants, his tapping on the podium, the noises he made, the expressions on his face as he did it. It was a religious act, an exorcism, resisting and confronting the devil. The language in his speech could not just be heard, it was felt. It was connected to that oldest language, that voice that called all things to rise up, that humming, an intense vibration that turned into heat, then life, then music, then us. Imamu was clearly in the middle of that and tried to share it with all of us. I want to tell you about my father, a funny gentleman, a human being really that cared for the community's children, that made a safe place for them, that raised hundreds, that married people and gave them names, that loved his children and grandchildren, and introduced us and everyone around us to the world and its music. In fact, I grew up in music. The jazz and blues specifically. If you ever came to my parents' home, his wife Amina, my mother of 47 years, their life together, their struggles, their trials and tribulations were also a part of his development and theirs and all of us, really. But if you ever came into this home, you saw books everywhere, the written word, art, and you heard Coltrane or Monk, definitely Ellington and Sun Ra, a few of the big bands like Basie or Bebop, like Charlie Parker, sometimes Mayfield or Marvin Gaye. My mother loved Billy, so she got played. than Sarah Vaughan, Ella Fitzgerald, Miriam Makeba. I heard Nina Simone play the piano in my living room. Woke up to her one morning and sat and watched Max Roach in the basement of my home. There were parties that went on into the wee hours of the morning. Hours the next day with food from all over the world and most often my mother's famous black beans and rice. There was always poetry read and great speeches given from dignitaries and artists from all over the world. That's why I never understood the moniker of racism they tried to lay on him. I heard artists from Latin America, Africa, the Caribbean, Europe, and activists alike. So I had no choice but to love art, or at least know its relevance to life and the living. My father was like that music, blues people. The music tracing our steps through history, our most tragic episodes and our proudest moments. The music told our story and our changes from slavery to freedom and every episode after. And just like the music changes based on mood, tempo, time, condition, so did our circumstance and so did my father. He was often criticized for being inconsistent or capricious, but the same critics that can't comprehend jazz couldn't explain him either. He, like jazz, always had a consistent beat, an underlying message, something that connected it all together. My father lived his life in the open. He stumbled through this place, and to stumble means to move forward faster. Faster than most of us, that is, as we worried about falling, took easy and careful steps. He was in the rhythm and out of it all at the same time. He took intellectual risk and usually landed square on his feet. Others believe unscientifically that they should always remain the same, no matter what the world is telling them or how fast things move, they will be consistent and remain the same. But to remain in the same place is really to move backwards or be backwards eventually. Everything in the world is in constant motion. Even history is not stuck in the past. All things are in constant motion, some slower than others, but moving nonetheless. My father moved, his ideas moved, and those that were around him and that could keep up with him moved too. The death of Malcolm sped things up a little, and the struggles around the world sped them up even faster. They tried to force him to remain in 1961, but he refused to. They still try to force him to remain there. He still refuses to. The press, the critics, his detractors try and fit him into one refrain, one stanza, but he was moving even today. They write about him and paint a small piece of him, the part they are comfortable with, the part they can explain that fits into their narrative. But my father didn't write for critics. He didn't create because of or for them. He did it because it was a part of him. He was the music, as he says, the blues himself. Anyone that is the same person today that they were 20 years ago is someone that is not alive. Anyone that thinks and understands the world the same way they did 10 years ago has not traveled. Anyone that has not evolved 5 years from now is someone that is afraid to encounter himself. My father is a revolutionary. And in that is the word evolve, or at least revolve. To turn, transform, transcend, to be transblusing. Jesus was a revolutionary. He told us in his scripture that when he was a child, he spoke as a child. And he himself evolved into something higher, greater, something spiritual that most can't explain. So they just call it Holy Ghost. But without disrespect, he was no ghost. He was very real, very musical, very transblusant, and causes every hand to clap and every feet to stomp. And when you go to a good service, you can't help but to get up and dance. My father began to understand that we are all connected everywhere, that the families on Clinton Avenue have more in common with workers in Ireland and Haiti and Ghana and South America and Mexico and Egypt than they could ever imagine. He began to understand, like King did, that our enemy was poverty, disease, and the people that got rich off of it. He understood that we need to control our resources and use them for our benefit, that this by itself is dangerous. He wanted to control his own voice, wanted to speak in a way that he saw fit, not in a neat way laid out for him. He improvised, and when things got tougher, he improvised some more. More importantly, he told the truth, which disturbed some because they worshiped lies and liars and took turns reinventing lies. Their existence was based on lies, and anything even resembled the truth scared them to death. My father rose for a minute around Christmas Day, laughing and joking, but always clear, introducing me to the nurses and doctors, saying, "You know my son, he's running for mayor. You know my son, He supported me, not just because I am his son, but because we are right. The people are pushing back against conservative, backward ideas. Millionaires that refuse to pay their fair share and elected ones that shut down government and refuse people Social Security and unemployment checks. People that hate unions and immigrants. The people are tired of bankers and hedge fund guys robbing their savings and foreclosing on their homes. They're pushing back against those that stand in the way of living wages and equal pay for equal work. They want domestic jobs and economic development plans, not billions for drones and more wars. People want courageous, democratic leadership, not bullies and demagogues. And that same group that united to elect President Obama is beginning to come together locally and elect local leadership and push for change in these cities all over America. This is the beginning of a progressive period. And we have to buttress it and exacerbate it with art and music and dance and essays and murals and fresh ideas. So I'm calling all cultural workers to get to work, to uplift, energize, and analyze, speak truth to power, excite these young people to embrace life and not to take their own, to build and control their neighborhoods and not destroy it, to read more and write more, to get them to see the world with themselves in it, the same way my father did for many of you. He taught us to understand that no matter what color tie you put on it, no matter how many letters are behind it, or the schools it went to, or how well you dress it up, or what language it speaks, a lie will always be a lie, and the people are tired of lies. They want to control their own schools and want to improve them themselves. They want to work to increase their wages. They want decent housing and to be able to feed their families. They want education for their children. They want their children alive and not in jail. They need creativity, not death marches. They want more democracy, not less. They're tired of dirty politics and dirty politicians. They want to see themselves in power and every motion used to push them further ahead. My father loved this city of ours. He was a Newarker to his core and made his final transition here in the South Ward in Beth Israel Hospital. He could have probably lived anywhere in the world, in Europe, in Africa, the West Indies, because he was loved and welcomed all over the planet. Because he chose to fight here, so do I. And hundreds of thousands of people like me. And even at the end of it all, he remained organizing and pushing that rock up the hill, determined to do so as Sisyphus, he would say, the gods trying to roll it back down on his head. He pushed, still one big, long, heavy push until his last breath escaped him and his heart beat for the last time. Have you ever seen black fire? I mean, the fire itself black, it burns deep, it never goes out. A volcanic whirlwind, a heat of blue black fire, you can feel its warmth through and through millions of miles away. It has its own wind. Many feel it but can't discover its origin. Sun Ra language and tongues only heard about. It gives birth, creates, and reproduces itself into itself, and all around it there is life. It burns brick, makes a hole in our caged mind. It's the light of the North Star at its base, is darkness in triple stages. Yeah, the bluest of black I ever felt. Have you ever seen black fire? It burns deep, it never goes out. It is at the origin of things, the thought that thought of itself and turned itself into itself. It is Malcolm. It is Malcolm's voice, 116th Street, final call in his left hand. It hides in the screams at the Audubon Ballroom, impregnating our children's minds with self-determination. Have you ever seen black fire? It burns deep. It never, ever goes out. Have you ever seen black fire? It burns deep. It never, ever goes out. You can smell it in the cinders of civil rights chants of 17-year-olds on the Edmund Pettus Bridge, dodging water hoses. It's that next time fire Baldwin shouted. At its core, you can hear it burning, you can hear it glowing, you can hear it growing like a whisper, a steady hum, a djembe drum beating against our conscience, waking our desire to be human, to be in tune with the world as it moves, burning individualism and greed. It will drive you sane. It is Panero's cause and because. It is Albizu dancing bomba on the heads of his captors. It is a freedom dance. Have you ever seen black fire? It burns deep, deep it never goes out. It is the answer to the question most asked. Why, and why again, said Imamu. It'll make you wise. It is the Underground Railroad, the way out, Huey's Red Book, Lumumba's spirit, Mandela's raised fist. It rests in the palms of friends of mine, waiting to explode all over the next day, our day after, our right nouns, and light up our tomorrows. We are an army of soldiers. We are an army of soldiers, of artists, armed only with our language and our history, vowing never to be slaves again, to be against poverty and dead children before their time, to live forever and forever and forever, and finish the sentences of writers long gone. Have you ever seen black fire? It burns deep. It never goes out. You can try to extinguish it, but it never goes out. It never, ever goes out, only up. Or out as in broad, as in multiply, as in blues, black bass of the fire, dancing, flickering at times, but never all the way gone. Dancing, flickering at times, but never all the way gone. Dancing, flickering at times, but never all the way gone. It is Baraka's legacy. Black fire, hot beboppers, musical geniuses, magical words that burn holes all the way to freedom. Hey, Imamu! Imamu, black fire, where are you? Imamu, black fire, where are you? Where are you, black fire? Imamu, where are you? Black fire, Imamu, where are you? Black fire, Imamu, where are you? Where are you, black fire? Imamu, where are you? Black fire, whalers, 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 whale on!
You've been listening to Ras Baraka speaking at his father, Amiri Baraka's homecoming. That about wraps it up. We're making way. We're out the door. Peace out till tomorrow, folks. Peace.